If you've been with us the last couple weeks, you know that we're working through this series that we've called Waiting, and we're talking about what it means to wait. The theological idea behind this all is that we believe in resurrection, right? Like, that's what we celebrate at Easter, that there's a resurrection coming where we will be made whole again. And then we were broken, and then there's all this space in between, and that's what we're talking about, that space in between. What does it look like between that space where I was broken and somehow I found Jesus or I got saved or I decided to follow Jesus, whatever language you use, what does it look like from that point where we see all the conflict in us, right? We see the places where we're being made new and we see the places where we're broken, and that's confusing a little bit in this in-between time, right? Do we see that? So that's what we're talking about in this series. So my question to start this morning is this. When you think of the word wait or waiting, besides White Lion, what do you think of? Nobody else thinks about White Lion, apparently, except me. It was a band in the 80s. They sang a song called Wait. Anyone? Come on, somebody. Nobody will admit it. All right, three of us. You had to be a certain age. What do you think of? What's the mental pictures? When you think about waiting, what do you think about? Waiting for the Lord. What else? Anxiety. Hospitals. Yes. Hang on to that one. That's good. We're going to come back to that one. Silence. Standing in a line. Good. Yeah. Pregnancy. Waiting. It'll never end. Over here. Impatience. Yeah. So for me, the mental image, as soon as Dustin and I first talked about this series, the mental image to me is a doctor's office, right? With magazines that are like, you know, highlights from when I was a kid, still sitting on the table, you know, and chairs that were last upholstered again when I was a kid. And so like that kind of space and being surrounded by people that frankly creep me out because I don't know why they're at the doctor too. I know I'm fine and I'm there for a checkup, but what kind of infectious disease do those people have, right? And so that's my immediate thing is that place where I'm sitting, waiting for a plane, right? Just sitting. And so in our culture, like this is what waiting looks like today, right? Like doing important things, like playing Angry Birds Go, which is the latest last obsession now. Like whatever it is, like that's what waiting looks like, where we do nothing. And what we're going to try to do this morning is build a case that when we talk about waiting in the theological and the Christian sense, that we aren't talking about passive waiting, we're talking about active waiting. And maybe somebody has a word for this. Jeff and I were in my office brainstorming a little bit this week for this morning's talk, and we were talking about, like, we don't know the word, and I couldn't find one. Like, what is that word that means I'm waiting, but I'm not just sitting here doing nothing? Because in our culture, waiting means I'm sitting here doing nothing, waiting for something to happen. What does it mean to wait, but be active in our waiting? So, for example, there's this, right? Those of you that have taken any, like, basic psychology, basic, you know, any, or you've sat with a counselor at any level in your marriage, there's a difference between listening and active listening, right? There's the listening I do that when she says, what did I just say, that I can repeat it back, even though, like, there's just this thing in my head, it's like a 10-second delay, right? Whatever she said in the last 10 seconds, I can spit it back. Bam. But that's not actually listening, right? There's a kind of listening where I'm leaning in, I'm making eye contact, I'm affirming the other person, I'm engaged in the conversation. You understand the difference between those two things? There's just the, of course I have ears, and the, no, I'm listening to you. And the same thing with waiting. What we're trying to get after is away from these ideas when it comes to our faith of waiting is this place of just, I do nothing. I'm in a spiritual desert. My health is falling apart. I need Jesus. Whatever our thing is instead of just sitting and waiting, like, I hope something happens to me. But instead that we fill that space with, this is what I do in the waiting. Here's how I go about waiting. Jeff pointed me to a song that I'm going to play for you. It's a song called What Sarah Said by Death Cab for Cutie. This is what we think of, I think, often when we think about waiting. It comes from a hospital room, and it's his story of being in a hospital room. So just listen for a couple minutes. Thank you.
ash in my breast as I said to myself that I'd already taken too much today. As each descent watching someone die.
Christmas, everyone. It's a fairly dark song, right? But doesn't that capture what we often think of when we think about waiting? That it's like sitting in a hospital room waiting and watching somebody die, and there's nothing we can do in the meantime. There's nothing we can do about it. In this sense, like sometimes I hear Christians talk, and we're just like nihilists. Like we talk that way, like I got saved and I can't wait for Jesus to come back someday. And then there's no discussion of what this space in the waiting room looks like. What does it mean to be formed in the image of Christ? What does that process look like? We just don't even talk about that because we're so fixated sometimes on what happens out there on resurrection. And don't hear me wrong, we should be resurrection people. We should be hoping for the redemption of all things. But in the meantime, it's not this. It's not just sitting in a waiting room watching someone die. It's not that. So I want you to turn this morning to Romans chapter 12. We're going to read a little bit together, and then we're going to reflect on Romans 12. I have another song to play for you this morning. It's going to be a whole thing, you know. Now, someday when I grow up, and I feel like I'm a grown-up pastor, which might never come, I'm going to teach a whole series on the book of Romans. But until then, it just terrifies me, so I mostly stay away, all right? Because it's big, all right? You may not know this about Romans, it's big, all right? So maybe someday when I grow up, we'll get there. But for now, we're just going to content ourselves with Romans chapter 12. Let me bring you up kind of roughly to the flow of the argument. Through the first eight chapters of Romans, Paul's talking about the problem. He's doing a lot of heavy, heavy theology on what does it mean to be the people of God? What does it mean to be saved by faith and not works and all these things? He's doing all that. And around chapter 8, he makes a transition where he starts talking more practically. And I love chapter 12 because it gets really, really, really practical. And you don't have to know all the deep theology of the first 11 chapters of Romans. Romans to get to chapter 12 and get just richness. And so we're going to read together, and I'm just going to pause a couple times as we read through these two chapters, which isn't as long as it sounds. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So right off the bat, this text, the rest of what we're going to read is what Paul would say. Paul's not a guy that denies resurrection, right? If you read the rest of Paul, you understand from Paul that he's a big resurrection guy. And yet he's talking here about, in the meantime, when we're in the waiting room, this is what it looks like to be formed in the image of Christ, to offer our bodies as living sacrifices, to be transformed by the renewing of our mind, to become more like Jesus, which he's going to get to. So he starts then unpacking exactly what he's thinking of, exactly what Paul would say, I think, if he were standing here and I said to Paul this morning, first of all, be cool, all right? Don't be all intense like you always are. Be cool. And then you're speaking at Imago this week, and you're going to talk about what it means to live between personal salvation and the redemption of all things. Tell people what it looks like to live in this space. Exactly what we're talking about this morning. And he would say this, 12:3. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. For just as each of you has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others, and we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. So what's the first thing he says? In the waiting room, what are we doing here? What's he saying? Be humble. What else? Use your gifts. Contribute meaningfully. So last week, I think most of us in this room probably contributed in some way meaningfully, right? So last week we did our banquet. It was, here's the thing. I went home and I'm marveling at Christina and how she pulls it all together. And then when I said that to her, she's like, well, it's not on me. It's on incredible volunteers. Cause I have nothing to do with that, right? And so I showed up last Sunday to serve meals and I volunteered to be in the kitchen crew and we had a blast in the kitchen. We had a whole cauldron of corn that I was responsible for and I stirred the corn and dished the corn, like all the, I was the corn guy. And so I was amazed to me that I just showed up and I went into the kitchen and I did my stuff with the corn, but this whole thing went off and you can't believe, like last Sunday, we were expecting like 65 people and I think we fed 110 meals, right? That, you don't get that by just showing up and saying, well, let's feed some people. Incredible people using gifts of administration and hospitality. And the worst part of the day is that we had people that wanted to sit at the tables that couldn't because there wasn't space for them. Like our people that wanted to sit with people, like wanting people using relational gifts and gifts of corn and gifts, people that stood at the dishwashing sinks for like 2 hours straight, just washing dishes as fast as they could so we could use them again, right? That to me is beautiful. That's exactly what Paul's talking about, is that when you're a body, when you're a church, and not just us, but bigger, when you're a body, everybody just does their little pieces and their parts. And for this person, it's this thing, and this person, it's this thing, and this person, I don't expect anybody else in the church to want to teach. Like, I expect when I say public speaking doesn't bother me a bit. I don't care how big the room is. It doesn't scare me a bit. And people look at me like I'm the strangest person in the world. I don't expect other people to get it, you know? And yet other people have gifts. And I'm like, I don't get how you stand at a dishwashing sink for 2 hours and just wash dishes. And yet that's what Paul's talking about, is that there's something when a body gets together, it works, right? When everybody's just doing their part, you can do big stuff like this. That's what it looks like to be in the waiting room. And then Paul goes on, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor, serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn, live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. And on the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I'm going to jump a little bit. Paul then talks about being subject to governing authorities and paying your taxes. Then he gets to verse 8. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other command there may be, are summed up in this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. That's huge, isn't it? Let's just reflect right there. Tell me some of the things that jump out at you. What is Paul talking about? What does living in this waiting room space look like? If it's not passive, what does it look like to live in the waiting room space? What are the things that jumped out at you? I'll disagree with you. It's not the 11th commandment. It's the first. It's the one that supersedes them all. And that's his point, is it doesn't go on par with these. It's bigger than all of them. Yeah. Totally busting your chops. All right, what else? I feel spunky this morning, all right? What else? Lots of rich things there. Just tell me, reflect back some of the ones that jumped out at you. And we won't read into what you say. Yeah. Can I be political for a second? How does a Christian then condone torture, right? Love does no harm to a neighbor. Where do we ever have space for a Christian to say, torture? Eh, okay. I know, I stepped on toes there, but oh. What else? Yeah, so who knows how long this thing's going to be, and we're going to get to that in just a second, but he's talking about making space, doing something in this space, yeah. Yeah, everything in here is relational. I was thinking this morning when they were reading the scriptures about the joy candle, which we had reflected on earlier in the week when we did our Wednesday morning prayer time, is this idea that if we're going to have joy, joy never comes through stuff. Never, joy doesn't come through the next trip or the next thing or the next, you know, up here. Joy is always something that happens relationally, I believe. I mean, that's what I think. I think that's what it's pointing to. That it's always in the serving, it's always in the one another's. That's where joy is. When I think about joy in my life, I'd never think about my stuff. It's always people. It's always that moment. What else? Yeah, that's a good word. We can use our gifts in pretty destructive ways, right? Pretty self-serving ways. And so this goes from taking your gifts, and then here's the places in which you use your gifts. Yeah, that line, bless those who persecute you. We're going to come back to that in just a minute, too. Yeah, we can't do these things later. Or maybe we can. We don't know. But these are the opportunities we have in front of us right here and right now. Right here, right now, said Van Halen. Verse 11. I don't think anybody ever worked Van Halen in Romans 13, just saying. Verse 11. And do this, understanding the present time. This is where Paul's now talking about the waiting room. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over, he said 2,000 years ago, but we'll forgive him that. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Think of the poetry of that, the armor of light. This morning, by the way, I came in here and it was all dark in here and I lit the two Advent candles, and then I think Dustin didn't like the ones I lit, so he blew them out and relit other ones. But anyway, so I lit the Advent candles and I just sat in the darkness in here for a minute, and I was singing the song, Your Light Shines. Your light shines on those of us in darkness. I was just singing that in the dark because it was just really, I felt like it was a cool moment for me in the sanctuary alone. But that idea of in the darkness of this room early this morning, there's light, you know, and the idea of an armor of light, put on light. Just, I'd love it. Let us behave decently as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, verse 14, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the flesh. The summary of all of that, all of the don't be conceited, be humble, practice hospitality, bless those who persecute you, do not repay evil with evil. The summary of all those things, love does no harm to a neighbor. The summary of all of that is put on Jesus Christ. So what it looks like in the space between personal salvation and the redemption of all things in the waiting room is that it's in this process of putting on Jesus Christ. Or to use the language of our church, right? That I was a broken icon and Christ is in the process of forming me and fixing the broken image. And someday the image of God in me will be fully put back together and it will be radiant and it'll be beautiful and I will be uniquely reflecting the image of God as God created Charlie to do. But in the meantime, I'm putting it back together and it's conflicted and it's messed up and it's some days it's really good and then other days it gets real tarnished real fast and other parts of it are being formed and other parts of it are really, really not, right? And that's what he's talking about here. So the process is, it's an ongoing action that I am putting on Jesus Christ. I'm in the process of, think of it in clothing. You put, especially in the winter, right? 5 layers all the time, right? And so it's thinking through, I'm outside a lot, so I'm dressing for outside and I wear no less than 6 layers at all times. And I'm thinking through, okay, if it's gonna warm up today, like the lying weather forecasters say, I need to think through how I'm going to take these off, right? So I want the heavier stuff. You know, like I'm thinking through, that's the imagery. Is that in this waiting room, we're putting on Christ. We're piece by piece by piece, we're putting on Christ. And someday we will be whole and it will be all good and we'll have all our clothes on. I don't think that's what it said because that makes the analogy go a little weird. But that's the idea, right? So let me talk a little bit about what this means. We have this saying at this time of year, and usually it's by the member of the family who is the most procrastinator, right? Who on December 23rd meant to go shopping for people and didn't, and then shows up at the Christmas Eve party with all the family and says what? Well, it's the thought that counts, right? I meant to buy you a gift. In fact, I meant to buy you a really nice gift. It's the thought that counts. Now, in any social situation, there's only one person who believes that, right? Who believes that? The person who said it is the only one who believe it, because what we all know on the other side is I don't care what you think, right? I wanted a gift, right? I don't think any of us are that nasty, but I don't need you to tell me that you thought nice things about me. What I need is you to show me. Think if marriages were built on this, right? I'm a horrible husband. I yell at my family. I yell at my wife. I leave dirty dishes everywhere. I break stuff on purpose. You know, I just walk in my house and empty drawers and I say, you know, I thought about being a good husband and a good father tonight, but I didn't. But the thought counts. Good luck cleaning up my mess, right? What he's talking about in these passages, I think, is the idea that love doesn't have good intentions, that love does. Love shows up. I read most of a book this week called Love Does, and so I'm just stealing the title. I didn't have anything from the book to share, but I love the title at least, so I'll steal the title. Because I love that, right? That love does. Love just shows up. And I think what this passage is mostly about and what it means to be in the waiting room is showing up whenever and wherever we can. The active listening thing, the active waiting thing. I'm leaning in, I'm paying attention, I'm looking. And let's just be, okay, can we all stop being hypocrites right now? We've all done both, right? We've all been the person that said it's the thought that counts, and we've also been the victims of the thought that counts, right? Don't sit here and think, yeah, other people don't show love. We've done the same thing. We've said to people, okay, I have this friend from high school, and I love him. He is a funny guy. When we get together, we laugh. I loved him. In high school, he was the starting two guard, and I was the backup two guard. So in practice, we guarded each other. And he's really intense, and he would say things to me in practice, like, be rough. Like, he wanted me to, like, to push him around and punch him, and it was fun. Practice was a hoot, right? Because I couldn't play rough enough for him. He wanted me to be as rough as I could in practice. He's just intense like that. Fun guy. Anyway, I love when I see him. I love when we get together, and every time we bump into him, he's like, dude, because he says dude a lot. Dude, we have to get together. Why haven't you called me? And I'm like, dude, you have my number. I throw a dude back, because when I'm around people that say dude, I can't not say dude back, right? I know who White Lion is, right? So I say, dude, you have my number too. And so all the time, our relationship is always thought that counts, right? I think we both think about each other. Boy, it'd be really good if we got together a whole lot more often. And we don't do it. And we'll see each other again in a couple months in a random place. And he'll be like, dude. And I'll be like, dude. And then we won't call each other, right? And we've all done both of those things, right? We've all been the victims of somebody who had all kinds of good intentions, who told us the right words about how they loved us. But when it came to showing up, they failed on the showing up part. On the part where we really needed them to show up, they didn't show up. And to be fair, we've all done the other side of that too, right? We had really good intentions. There was this moment where I knew God was telling me I needed to help this person. And I just didn't. And if I'm really honest about it, it wasn't, I don't have a good excuse. I wanted to watch TV. And it was going to take time and energy, and I just didn't want to give it. And so I chose the other thing. I think, to be fair, we're all schizophrenic souls, right? I was talking to somebody recently, and she said, I think I have spiritual ADD. And I said back to the person, I think we all have spiritual ADD. That we all, that's the journey for all of us. That there's places in us that we're being formed, and it's exciting, and God's doing work. And there's places of desert and desolation. There's places where I feel like, so if you think about your whole life, right? I'm sure this morning I could ask you, what's your lament? And I would bet most of us could say, in this area of my life, here's my lament. My kids, my marriage, my job, my finances, my health, whatever it is, there's a lament. But if I also ask the other side, what are you just crazy about in your life right now? What is so good? How is God blessing you? I'm sure all of us could have that. And it would be the same list, right? My kids, my job, all that stuff. And at any given point in my life, if you ask me, I sometimes picture my life, I've told you before, as like a series of dials on the dashboard, right? The gauges are always going back and forth, and so we're all a little bit schizophrenic. There's places where maybe God is really doing something in us, and there's places where it feels like a desert. And what I'm saying is I think in that space, in that waiting space, that's what it always looks like in the waiting space. It always looks like this. It always looks schizophrenic. It's always that. But the challenge is even in that, I keep showing up for other people. There's this guy who every week here comes up to me and says, man, I know you're going through a rough season of life, and I want to know how I can be with you in prayer or whatever. And what I know about this guy is if I wrote up our list of who's got the bigger lament, he wins, hands down, right? And yet somehow in the waiting space, he's finding places in himself to keep showing up for people, even as people are showing up for him. And we show up for people, and they show up for us. And that's, I think going back, that's what the body thing looks like, right? We keep showing up. And somebody's showing up for us. We show up for them, they show up for us, back and forth. That's what makes intimate relationships. That's what binds the body of Christ together. There's a song that I've referred to more than once here. It's old school. If you grew up in the 90s as a Christian in a Christian college, you listen to Cademan's Call. And there's this song. Those of you that are a little bit younger, you know Derek Webb, who was one of their songwriters and now is out on his own. Derek Webb wrote this song years ago. And there's this line in the middle of the song, but it really kind of permeates the rest of the song. I'll point out the line when we get to it that I love, and it talks about showing up. The song is called Center Aisle. This is not a great recording. This album does not exist on Spotify or iTunes. It might exist in a closet somewhere, well, in a box right now, somewhere deep in storage. I may have it in a box. So it's not a great recording, but the song was written when he was leaving the funeral of one of his very good friends' sister, younger 16-year-old sister, I think, if I remember the story correctly, who had just committed suicide. And so this is the song he wrote as he left. And I just want you to listen and think about it in terms of what it means to show up.
Back in my car, driving home. 'Cause the air was thin and so cold back in there, and was my first time, won't be my last time. And the questions rise, and expectations fall in light of it all. There aren't words to say.
This section right here.
Words I remember. The presence is. Good friend once told me, and he was there, but she wasn't there. It's not fair. What crimes have you committed, demanding such penance? Couldn't wait for 5 more minutes and a cry for help. 'Cause this room is so peaceful and this room is so quiet, and I hate the silence, and I can't walk center. Been here for over 3 hours behind the flowers, so beautiful and young and so alive and so in need of someone to talk to them. 'Cause there's our fragile lives. And what crimes have you committed, demanding such a penance? Couldn't wait for 5 more minutes and a cry for help. 'Cause this room is so peaceful and this room is so quiet, and I hate the silence, and I can't walk center. I think about my brother and how I just stood there, my hands in my pockets and my heart in my throat.
Okay, I'm going to stop there, because that's, to me, what that's about. Love shows up. You know, oftentimes when people are in their waiting rooms and their desperate places and their dark deserts, we think we have to come up with something clever to say and powerful. And I'm a words guy. My living is based on saying the right things and writing the right things and in the right moment saying the right things and not saying things when I'm supposed to say things. And so sometimes in those moments, I feel like, oh man, I got to say the right thing right now. And what I've always, I mean, that song's been in my head for years, and I find myself singing it sometimes because I love that line about the thing about presence. words aren't remembered, presence is. And then he talks about standing there with his hands in his pocket and his heart in his throat. And yet, through it all, he just shows up. And we can all think about those people who, in our lives, at different times, whatever we were going through, they just showed up. And they said, you know what? I know that you have all these doubts about God. Go ahead. Drop your lament on me. I'll listen. I'll show up. Whatever you want to say, just say it. Going through a hard time and you need something, I'm there. I'll do that thing. And I don't have the right words, but we put so much emphasis on that. And yet what we're called to do, I think, if I read Romans 12 and 13 right, there's very few places where it's about words. It's more about doing and serving and being there and showing up. So a couple months ago, was it back to July maybe, August, you wrote this? Jeff wrote this song, and he wrote it based on Romans 12 and then the last verse of Romans 13, and we sing it here, and sometimes when we sing songs, I know I get kind of, we just say words. And so this morning, we're going to move to communion, and we're going to sing this together as we move to communion, and this is singing Romans 12. And you'll recognize some of the phrases in it. Our prayer this morning is to be a blessing to those who cause suffering. Now, I want to point to this line for a minute. You're not praying right here. When you walk up here, we're not praying for those that are suffering. We do pray for those that are suffering, but we're talking about what it means to be a blessing to people who cause suffering. If you don't feel the weight of that, right? That's hard stuff. That's what he's talking about blessing those who persecute you. To rejoice with those who are rejoicing, to weep with our friends with their weeping, those things are a little bit easier. But then this, and I this is weird praising Jeff when he's sitting in the room and getting ready to do the song, but I love this. We're putting on Christ like a new skin, and we won't fit in it until Resurrection Day. And there's this process in the waiting room that we're in the process always of putting on Christ. We're putting on Christ. And it's never-ending project. We don't get to arrive. We don't get to say, this is where it is. This is where I'm at. And I will be here forever and ever more. Amen. It's always process that it'll someday be completed in us. And then so we're going to sing in a minute. We're going to eat with the poor, which some of you already did this morning and last week at the banquet. We're going to party like priests, which again, Jeff explained that line when we did this. We serve ridiculous feasts. Love that. Inviting all whom we love and adore. And then the first time I heard this song, this line just, and those we wish would not come through our door, because we all have those people, right? Help us to seek peace as far as we can and to let you bring justice and righteousness as you arrive and set all things to right. Until then, please help us learn not to fight. We're putting on Christ like a new skin. Here's the invitation. This, on one hand, these are the kind of messages where I feel like are so important to say, and I feel like I have said nothing brilliant this morning, right? There's nothing I've said that's been like, I never thought about that before, because we know this stuff. We know that we're supposed to be putting on Christ. We know we're supposed to love shows up, and yet it's so difficult to do. My friend Steve tweeted this week, and I love this. He wrote, "It's so simple. But be an encouraging present today in small ways. Make eye contact, give a generous tip, give up your spot in line." And the invitation to you today is this. As we're taking communion, I'm going to pray, and we're going to have a little bit of silence, and then I'll pray. Very little silence. Then I'll pray, and then we'll take communion. And during that space, maybe God is asking you to show up for somebody else this morning. Maybe there is somebody before you leave this room or this building that you need to walk up, and you need to look them deep in the eyes and say, "I'm with you. In whatever way I can, I'm with you. I'm praying for you. I'm bringing you a meal this week. We're going to have coffee this week." Like, whatever it is, it's going to start with words and it's going to move. But you're going to at least let somebody know that you're with them. You're in it with them. And then maybe there's something that as I've been talking, you've been thinking, there's a face, there's a person, there's a situation where you know this person needs this right now. And instead of thinking good thoughts about this person, I'm going to be the one to actually step up and do something, right? Because I think we do it all the time. We think all kinds of good thoughts about people. We really do. And then we get choked in on all the details, and then we don't. And I'm like, well, what if they think I'm weird if I do that? Like, they're going to think I'm a little, if I go up and just give them a hug, they're going to think it's weird that I just needed to hug them today. But I just, they needed a hug, and I know they needed it. And so I'm going to do that. And so maybe there's something today. I just really want to challenge you. Sometimes we hear things like this and we're like, yeah, that's exactly what I think. And then we go home and You know, football's on this afternoon. Although I don't know why you Bears fans are still watching. But it's a train wreck. Sorry. But maybe before the day's out, there's something and you need to tell your spouse, hey, this person, I'm going to do this for them because I need to. Maybe there's some, you got to get it out somehow, or you need to write it down, or you need to maybe today before it's over send that email to somebody that says, hey, I'm with you in this, and here's how I'm with you. Let's have lunch. Let's have coffee. Here's the thing that I'm going to do, or whatever it is. Okay? Let's be silent just a minute together and listen to God, and then we'll pray and move into communion. God, I just hate waiting rooms. I hate waiting. I hate not having answers, and I hate the places in my life where I'm really unformed. The places in my life where it feels like you're silent or disinterested, or all the stuff we've talked about the last couple weeks. I just hate those things. And sometimes those things are an easy excuse to not show love, to just kind of focus on myself and be about me. And yet God challenges us, move us, help us to show love. Help us to find those places that you've asked us uniquely to step into. There are things I know that you've asked me to step into and help give me the courage to step into those. So God, be with us in this Advent season that will show love, even in the midst of our own waiting rooms and our own despair. God, bring those people to mind today. Maybe they're in this room. Maybe they're in this building. Maybe they're in our workplace. And we just know right now that this is what we're supposed to be doing. And so help us to follow through today. In your name I pray. Amen.